Hello, folks, and welcome to the April cast for the 7th of April 2021. So, I've got quite a lot to say, but before I kick off with today's topic, I've been getting a lot of very wonderful email feedback and feedback on the Fediverse. Some of you folks have been making some absolutely, most of you folks, in fact, have been making some absolutely fantastic points. And I would like to read them on future episodes of either April Cast or maybe Trendy Talk. So, if you folks are emailing in or using whatever communication method you wish, could you let me and preferably the others know if you're interested or if you're okay with your comment being read on the show or out online, and whether or not you wish to be anonymous? Because I could read a comment and not give your name out, or I could read your comment and give your name out, or I could not do either. It's all entirely up to you. But with so much intelligent stuff coming in through the email, which never came across in a lot of YouTube comments, a lot of YouTube comments were just, thoughts of the moment. Whereas, of course, when people are composing emails, it's long-form content. It's like writing a letter, and not just myself, but Hex and Drew have been getting some absolutely wonderful emails in. So in many ways, it would be a shame if some of these incredibly insightful thoughts were just to be kept in the, in private. And if you've sent a particularly lengthy comment in previously, feel free to follow up with an email saying, yes, no, whatever, just to be clear. But of course, in the spirit of the free software movement, in the spirit of ethical technology, we're going to always respect your consent and wishes. So today I'd like to reflect a little bit, but also share my thoughts on the debate we had in Trendy Talk the day before yesterday. It's been a couple of days since an April cast. I am still aiming to get 15 of these out throughout the month, particularly the part where we're talking about new technology and how it becomes developed. It's something that I've had quite a lot of feedback on, again, very insightful feedback. And it's got me thinking a lot about what technology means for us. In fact, I was talking with some friends about this today, and it's very difficult. Like a lot of, we were talking about how, we have access to everything now, right? We have access, we can watch whatever we want any time of day for a very nominal cost. If you're willing to pirate, then it's basically free on demand. Even so far as that, like Netflix, for example, will drop an entire series of a show all at once and leave it up to us as to how we'd like to watch it. We have these little voice activated computers in the corner of our rooms. Well, I don't, but some people do, where you can just say, Alexa, play Despacito, and it will just play, or any song you want. Basically, you can just utter the name of a song and it is played. That is quite remarkable. It's incredibly convenient. And I think it always begs the question, why is it convenient? And is making something convenient making it better? This is a very complex question because, as I was saying, we were talking about the media is now more convenient than ever before. And because of this convenience, we can have a lot more quality media. A lot more money goes into making TV shows bigger and better and brighter than ever before. Whereas previously, because TV had to take up so much time, that money was spent a lot more thinly to cover a lot more ground. There was, of course, more repeats and all that kind of thing. And I think most people would say that the quality of, like, when I say television, like visual entertainment, TV shows, movies, at least in the measurable ways, the superficial ways, have got better, more convenient, and more suitable to the consumer, to the end user. I'm sure there are many people that will speak the praises of older films and older TV shows. I think a lot of that can come down to nostalgia. I think that there are classic movies, and I think there are classic movies that fit within their time. But honestly, when I think about this, and I think that I really only have a couple of favorite movies. My favorite movie, in fact, is Sneakers. It's starring Robert Redford, Dan Aykroyd, Sidney Poitier, River Phoenix. It's got an absolute all-star cast. I think it came out in about 1992. It's a film about hackers and information and how governments use it and how big businesses use it in a really, like, really gripping story. It's an absolutely wonderful film. Favorite film of all time. Very much ahead of its time. In the early 90s, it was a film that it covered a lot of Cold War themes, which I think was incredibly interesting as well. Definitely worth a watch. But outside of my few favorite films, media does feel incredibly disposable. And not only does it feel disposable, but it almost feels like I can only ever decide to watch things I almost know I'll like. I am, in fact, rarely ever pushed outside of my comfort zone to try and enjoy media and content that has not basically been tailor-made for my personal tastes. However, I remember when I started using Linux. And this was before the days of Steam, and we had a very small handful of games. Games that the community, by and large, collected around. Because we had so few of them, we were a lot more grateful and appreciative of them. And because times were harder when it came to games, I feel that what games we had, we enjoyed more. And it made the culture that I was part of richer for it. And it also reminds me of the days of the old record shop, where, you know, kids would, like, save up their pocket money for a few weeks and they'd go and buy a Pink Floyd album or something like that, and they would enjoy that music in a way that we just don't enjoy music today. We listen to something we know we'd like, we'll enjoy it a lot, and a couple of weeks we'd have forgotten about it. Some would say that this is not a bad thing, this is just how we enjoy media now. It might be that it's a faster-paced moving world, but it also might be that things have become too easy for us. I am in some ways of that opinion, that just because something is easy does not inherently make it better. I think that, for example, when possible, walking and cycling are better than just taking the car. I think things like the car can make us lazy. And I think in many ways there are many technological assets that we have that I think take away from the spirit of life. And I think this is a philosophical and in some degree spiritual argument, because we can find measurable ways of how our life is better, but not necessarily measurable ways in what makes us happy. And I don't necessarily know what the end goal is. Is happiness the end goal? Is just to be, you know, just entertained, to pass the time? Is that the goal? Is it to be to enrich our souls? And I think many people have different ideas about what we actually kind of want about this. To just blindly entertain ourselves for the next half hour, that can be done with anything. I could find a funny video on YouTube that will do that. Do I want to watch something that is grandiose and you know, life-changing? I mean, I'll be honest, I really enjoyed Game of Thrones. I know it didn't exactly end too well, but there were parts of Game of Thrones, there were characters in Game of Thrones that genuinely challenged a lot of my perceptions about how I view the world. Sometimes, you know, this is how I want to do it, this is how I don't want to do it. This is how I challenge power in the face of adversity, and this is how one doesn't do that. And at least it asks and presents interesting questions there. And I think that's what good media does. But of course, not all media is going to be good media. I listen to a lot of podcasts. A lot of podcasts just like this, very easy to put together. Very low effort and low fidelity, but still worthwhile in one way or another, right? I'm just sharing my thoughts. But perhaps my outlook is valuable to some people. I know, judging from the feedback that I get, that some of you folks feel that it's valuable. But in many ways, is this more similar to a, you know, asymmetrical conversation? Quite possibly. In some ways, that's kind of how I feel like it. I don't feel like I'm presenting content to you, even in the same way that I would be in front of a camera. I feel like I'm just sort of having a chat over a cup of coffee almost, you know, and that you're just, you know, rather quiet there. And then, you know, a couple of days later, you're going to reply with a letter. So I think that sometimes we can fail to appreciate the beauty in the small things of life when we have so much decadence and abundance, really. And I also think that, and this has actually been relayed in a few posts, a few emails that came to me, and I think I tried to outline it in the Trendy Talk discussion, but I don't know how well I did. Now I've had a few days to sort of collect my thoughts. I kind of feel like, you know, you take something like the Amazon Alexa or any technology, smartphones, anything like that to make our lives more convenient, some of which is sold at a loss leader, but in many cases not necessarily. And we need to ask, like, what's it for, right? If this was not making the likes of Google, likes of Amazon more money, they, of course, would not be doing it. And to me, I just think of Alexa. I don't necessarily wholly have a problem with Alexa in and of itself, right? Alexa is basically a desktop computer that is just voice activated. Same thing with Google Home. They're computers, you just interface with them in different ways, and they're just thoroughly connected to the internet. A Google Home is, you know, arguably just a Chromebook that you use in a different way. Same thing with the Alexa. You can't do as many things with it, of course. I'm sure you could do more than you could do with a Mac. Hey. I use Macs at work. I just hate them. Every time you think that they can't do any less, they just end up doing less. It's great. They don't even support open source codecs because they want to support the codecs that they sort of own parts of, so that people who don't use Macs will then have to pay license fees to use codecs that Macs support. Oof. Talk about, you know, the hubris of your own technology there. Solving problems that don't exist just so that you can make a quick buck. But that aside, the issue that I have with particularly the voice-activated apps is that they fundamentally train us to be good consumers. They train us to be good customers. They train us to be subservient and cuckolded in this bright new future that the likes of Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates are all going to bring to us. And this makes me disappointed. Convenience is the bait that they use for the trap. And the super rich have a very well-defined ideology that they want the rest of the world to adopt. It's a particular type of capitalism. It's the type of capitalism where they fundamentally become the feudal lords of tomorrow. I'm reminded of course, the situation we had in Oxford regarding the what's now known as the AstraZeneca vaccine, where the Oxford team wanted to open source the vaccine. And pressure was put upon them by Bill Gates himself. And he's on the record for doing this. This is not any kind of cloak and dagger stuff. Bill Gates openly went down and he encouraged and put pressure on the Oxford team to actually maintain the intellectual property over the vaccine and then to provide it to the contract to AstraZeneca. Now, a lot of these financial costs were underwritten by wealthy people, by governments, by those with money. And I think that there's a possibility that Bill Gates thinks that he is acting in the interests of the world and that it's his judgment is based on ideology. He claims, of course, that you can't just have anyone going around developing vaccines and you can't just have anyone going around making vaccines. It will just be like people will be, you know, just botching stuff together and there'll be no oversight and people can't go around helping themselves. It would just be far too dangerous. And that's obviously, I mean, in many ways untrue, because here, at least in the UK, we have several layers of oversight through the not only the development process of a vaccine, but the manufacturing and distribution of a vaccine as well. It's highly regulated industry, and this is a highly regulated project. And we all know that it's imperative that there is, of course, trust in vaccinations, because we do need lots of people to get vaccinated here. But Bill Gates does this a lot. He manufactures ways in which only billionaires can save the world. Whether or not it's the stopping of malaria in Africa, whether or not it's reducing the effects of climate change, or in fact, whether or not it's just vaccinating the world against COVID-19. But every way that he's approached it has been in that, within the realms of that ideology, within this only I can save the world, only billionaires can save the world. And even if he's doing it at a financial cost, which I assume he is still hostile to people coming together to develop autonomy and a future for themselves. And that is the thing that I find concerning. It slithers through every facet of his ideology, and it's not just him. I think Bill Gates just happens to be more open about it, and I think that he also happens to be, at least in his mind, benevolent about it. I think many other billionaires are fundamentally quite happy to be selfish. I think Bill Gates might very well be, in his mind, selfless, but he only wants to save the world on his terms, if he can do it his way, in a way that maintains his power as one of the grand feudal lords of this time. And the thing is that if you challenge it, then what? Are you against, you know, stopping people getting malaria in Africa? Are you a climate change denier? Or, you know, are you happy for Mad Barry and his caravan no one really wants to go into to be, you know, developers of COVID-19 vaccines? And of course, you know, that's, he lays the foundations for poisoning the well in arguments against him when he does all these benevolent billionaire actions, which I think is problematic. If you want to pull a lot of people in the developing world out of poverty, you don't necessarily need to have a billionaire going around providing cash handouts, but rather to provide tools and knowledge to allow these communities to develop and work themselves out of poverty. And that way it gives them the dignity of the autonomy, but as well it gives them the sustainability. Like when billionaires decide that the, you know, that part of the world isn't worth saving anymore, those communities can still protect and help themselves. You know, you teach a community to build a well, you don't build it for them. Teach a man to fish, isn't it? And I think that within the eyes of these benevolent billionaires, that approach is unacceptable because it does not put them as the protagonist of their own story. And perhaps it's the hubris and, you know, egomaniacal nature of these people. I think that there's a good case that they believe that they're doing the right thing, but of course, we all like to think that we're doing the right thing. I don't think there's very many people that, you know, dress themselves in the morning, does up their shirt in the mirror, and then ask themselves, how can I be as evil as possible today? I don't think it works like that. I think, to be honest, the majority of human beings look at their lifestyle, do what they want to do, and then build their basis of morality around it. And I think that when we challenge ourselves to genuinely make the world a better place, that's going to require some sacrifices, and that's going to require some hard decisions, and that's going to require acknowledging that we've probably made some harmful mistakes. And those are very difficult things to do, at least in earnest. And I think that's why they haven't been done. We generally place the bar of moral acceptability slightly below where we are and what we're doing. So I think that any kind of road to success is going to be a difficult one, a hard-fought one, and one in which sacrifice is made. Now, again, it's not complicated as to what technology is harmful and what is not. Different people are going to consider different levels of harm to different parts of technology. But also, and this is what concerns me the most, is that technology that is fundamentally exploitative is going to be deceptive by design. And whilst some of us may have the wit to know what's happening, we are not only outnumbered, but outgunned in this particular battle. We, as educated and knowledgeable individuals, or at least those who are acting in good faith, are going to be wildly outgunned with the kind of marketing money that any of the big tech giants can throw at us. It's remarkable to think that Bill Gates is now the largest private landowner in the United States. Because, I don't know, maybe he'll use that land to curtail the effects of climate change. But of course, you know, to him, he's just the hero of the story, saving the country by doing this. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe he'll be getting into farming and he'll hoe all that land himself. So, yeah, there's just a few thoughts of mine. But I think that, in all honesty, sometimes, like, I think it's worth doing difficult things, sometimes because they're difficult, sometimes because they make us stronger, sometimes because they stop us being reliant on the strings that come with convenient technologies. It's quite possible for me, if I wanted to replace my car radio, which still plays CDs, with some MP3 player, with some smart device that can link into Spotify, with anything like that. I don't. I have about 8 CDs. I think like 4 of which are Beethoven symphonies and a couple of just guitar musicians. And I think there is a French piano album of some variety in there as well. Piano is not really great for driving. It's the notes don't hit well with the ambient sounds of driving, in my opinion. Anyway, eight CDs, that's enough. I don't do the world of driving, but I think it's always worth questioning whether or not you need everything. Whether or you know, and I think there is something to be said for modern day humility, the idea of not necessarily indulging in every convenience and you know, pleasure open to us. And I think that that's a complex one, because you know what is that means different things to different people. But I do fundamentally believe that if you believe in something, you do have to suffer for it in one way or another. Otherwise, you're not testing that belief. You do have to sacrifice something for it. And I think, and I say this as a atheist, right? But I think this is what the Christian idea of Lent is. It's kind of fitting that I'm speaking, you know, this is the Easter has just gone by. But to me, the idea of Lent, of course, symbolizes the sacrifices that Jesus made as he wandered the desert. But the reason why it is a tradition that has stuck with Christians today is that even the symbolic idea of sacrifice is still meaningful and relevant. The idea that we abstain from doing something that we would otherwise do as a way to test our faith, as a way to test our fortitude, as a way to test our character, I think is meaningful. Because how do you know if you believe? It's all well and good to develop a morality and an ideology around what you already do, but what you're really doing is just building a Twitter account. You're just trying to convince other people and maybe yourself that you're a good person, that you're a righteous person, that you're a person that means something. But if your ideology and your morality does not motivate you to change, then it's all pretty weak, right? It's barely an ideology. It's just an explanation of what you do and why you do it, right? I could be wrong, and, you know, this maybe I'm just talking an absolute pile of shite, but honestly, like, saying all the right things and, you know, in many cases, you know, blaming things on the right people in a lot of cases is, you know, it's all well and good to blame all the problems on the world on the super rich or on, you know, bad governance as well. And I'd be inclined to agree with, you know, both of those places of, you know, blame. But at the end of the day, someone's got to move the needle back in the other direction. Someone's got, you know, the autonomy has to be regained from somewhere, and if it's not from the grassroots, if it's not from people itself, then I don't know where it will come from. And maybe, you know, and maybe only billionaires can save us, and we just happen to have the right billionaires in charge. They just happen to develop the right company at the right time, and then cash out at the right time. I don't know. It's a tricky one, but when we start look at building a better future based on autonomy, I do see a lot of that in the free software movement in a really positive way. You want to know what a revolution that actually works look like? Look at the free software movement. And it doesn't work in ways that you'd expect, and there are twists and turns along the way. There'll be infighting, there'll be drama, there'll be compromises with people you really don't want to have to make compromises with. But you know, I think step by step, progress can be made. And even if the entirety of the world is not necessarily going to change, it would at least be nice to carve out spaces that we can call our own. And that, I think, the free software movement does do quite well. I think that we do see this ideology, and also the ideology of, like, in terms of the benefit of doing things the hard way, in terms of how it educates us and how it benefits us in many facets of life. Growing fruit and veg on your allotment or in your garden, that's a hard way of doing things. Of course, it would be plenty easier and probably cheaper if you bought it from the shops, but people still do it nevertheless because they see value in it. Growing your own flowers is another. If you're into woodworking, building your own furniture. I love building my own furniture. Give me a weekend to do some woodworking, and I feel absolutely fulfilled at the end of it. Creating our own music, of course, or fundamentally doing anything for ourselves. Cycling instead of driving. You know, any kind of sort of recreational activity where we decide to do something when there are easier mechanisms available, I think is valuable, and it is worthwhile. Sometimes it makes us more knowledgeable. Sometimes it makes us healthier. And sometimes it just is not always even explainable. But we do know that it's something that we live for in one way or another. So I think fundamentally speaking, I see a lot of technology that is designed to lure us in with the song of convenience, only to exploit us in incredibly subtle ways further on down the line to relieve us of our autonomy and independence, and fundamentally train us to be good subjects of capitalism. And, you know, when I look at how the business world is panning out today, being carved up into its various empires, Apple, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, Facebook, it does like we're reshaping the fuel system, you know, one person at a time almost. So I think that's about it from me today, but I just wanted to share this thought. It's something that keeps me driving towards the progression of free software, and not necessarily just free software. Just because something's open source and uses a free software license doesn't inherently make it, you know, truly freedom respecting. I'm immediately thinking, of course, of Signal. Signal, of course, is an end-to-end encrypted messaging app. The big news at the moment is that they're adding cryptocurrency stuff into it. But because you can't really set up your own Signal server, it doesn't really, to me, have that same kind of essence of freedom, right? You can't choose to use your own client. You can't choose to use your own server. You can't choose to take a step away from the system. And I believe it even requires Google services to run. Whilst it's open source, I don't think this is necessarily the open source world that free software activists hope for. But just a thought. Anyway, thank you very much for joining me. It's a pleasure as always. And please let me know your thoughts through email or via the Fediverse. Until next time, I've been Chris Ware, and you've been awesome. Toodaloo.